You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome into the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman. As always, I'm the host of this wonderful show and back for a week once more. A sad Vikings fan, Tony.
Yeah.
Real quick, I know this is the basketball podcast, but give me your quick football take before we start the show.
Yeah, they couldn't block a dang thing on Saturday, so that will lose you football games.
Yeah.
Vikings could really use Quentin Nelson there. I'll be relatable.
Yeah, they could use a more competent quarterback too, but that's beside the point.
Hey, he did all he could, man. I get that he's not great, but the line sucks. Anyway, basketball.
But like he has two of the best three wide receivers. Like two of the best, let's say 15 wide receivers in the league, maybe 20, so he should be better. But that's not the point again. Sorry. Keep it straight.
You know who was better at basketball?
It was the Indiana Pacers.
It was the Indiana Pacers who we saw the solo Miles Turner show this weekend, Adam.
We did. We saw a stellar 27-14 performance on Saturday when they beat the Bulls. No, Friday, sorry. When they beat the Bulls 116-105. A not-so-stellar performance by anybody when they lost to the Heat 122-108 on Wednesday. And they a stellar TJ Warren performance on, I believe it was Monday, right? And they beat the Hornets 115-104.
The whole weekend off really threw me off.
Yeah,
it was 2 days, and I was like, oh, I don't. Anyway, I think Turner is where I want to start today because we haven't seen him like that in a while, and a lot of it was the Bulls have this very gimmicky pick and roll defense coverage, and like if you watched the game, Turner just popped up wide open between 5 and 10 feet. I'm talking any time he wanted, and he finished. He was doing everything the Pacers asked him to. He would catch in the lane, and he had a few in the first quarter where he would flip up a floater, and he had two of those little turnaround post-up jumpers he's been hitting and stretched out for a couple threes. Like, no matter what the Bulls – I mean, I know their pick-and-roll coverage is gimmicky, but Turner basically got whatever he wanted.
And, like, they left him so much space that he could basically get the ball and hesitate for a second and still
throw the ball. Think, right.
He had that backdoor cut to what, Warren or somebody? I don't remember who it was, where he hit him on a beautiful pass.
Yeah. He had the second most assists of any starter. He was one away from the most.
Yeah, he had the kind of game where if he played the Bulls every night, he'd be the best center in the league right now.
Yes.
And rebound. Oh my god.
I mean, they had nothing. It was crazy. Like it seemed like at halftime, you'd think they'd be like, okay, if you're gonna be the dropper, you know, get farther into the lane so Turner's shooting or pop up all the way so we can have a guy come in from the weak side on the roll. And they didn't either. They just kind of sit him in the middle, and they didn't cover the angle for the pocket pass at all. And he just got literally whatever he wanted. And he did a great job of recognizing that space and obviously Sabonis could have done just as well against this. He didn't play, though, and Turner deserves a ton of credit for being the Sabonis role of being more fulcrum-y, where, like, he can recognize the space and get the pass and then do the next thing, whether that's score or dribble or pass or whatever. He doesn't normally get opportunities to do that, so seeing him just step right up, no problem. I mean, it was beautiful. He played amazing.
Yeah, so I think the real test for Turner will come on Monday when he goes against Horford. We'll talk about that game later. Obviously, but do you
especially
think,
if it's just him against?
Yeah, I'm assuming it's gonna be just him. All later, in the show. But do you think this game gives any credence to the whole? Oh, maybe they're better off with one center basically on the roster. I mean, I don't know if it really does. I mean, like I said, it's one game, but I guess Turner puts up these games. It feels like every so often, anyway. So I'm not sure it was like something that's like we're gonna like consistently see. But I think it does give some thought. Like maybe the power forward, double center, whatever lineup is good enough, but maybe it's not peak potential.
Their coverage was so gimmicky that this is not the game to like throw in as a data point. There are other circumstances where Sabonis in the bench does a great job, or Turner with Sabonis out does a great job, or whatever, where you know you can maybe think, oh, they made a run against this lineup or this team or whatever. But I think, you know, like I said, because their coverage scheme was so bizarre, and they do this. So I'm just dumping on the Bulls. That's kind of unfair. Wendell Carter is actually a good defender, and this was their first game without him, and they didn't adjust their defensive strategy, which in one game, you get a little bit of leeway, even though you probably should know not to do that. Anywho, it didn't work at all, and Turner deserves credit for carving it up, but I don't think we can look at this like no other team does that. Like, there's a reason that we don't see those kind of performances all the time. And then, you know, if the Turner Sabonis duo wasn't a plus whatever, like over 5 points per 100 possessions this year, then maybe you'd look at this data point a little more strongly. But I don't think it shows the peak is necessarily is like so much higher per se. Like, I don't necessarily think this game is useful for that.
Yeah, and I still think I could attend. What could you really get anything better than what those two players are? Right, I mean, is there any, you know, stretch four out there who would, like, you could basically trade one of them for? I don't think you can get like
right,
a better player than one of those guys.
It's funny because like when Turner was struggling, you know, late November, early December, all the trade buzz pieces that came out from people who said, you know, executives say they believe this, the Pacers are shopping this guy. You know, when Turner was struggling, it was, everybody expects them to move a big man. And then he figured it out. And, you know, he had that conversation with Nate where they, you know, they talked through, they said, okay, we're going to figure out how to make you work as best as we can at the four. And so you have more solo center minutes and all this stuff. And ever since then, he's been awesome. And he's been really good. And the pairing has been really good. And all of a sudden, all the articles say, executives think the Pacers are not interested in moving their centers. Well, no shit. It works now. So why would they change it if it's working?
Yeah, and I contend still, what team is going to trade a stretch four for a center when stretch four is literally probably the most valuable player in the league in terms of just like finding one? I'm kind of stretch four is like LeBron, Kawhi's, the Paul George type players. I mean, just like literally it's almost impossible.
The versatile fours, right?
Yeah, the versatile four. Maybe not, you know what I mean? But those, because really there aren't really any true just like stretch fours, right? Name a player who only plays stretch four. It's mainly a guy who plays small forward and can play four, maybe play center and four.
Right. The guys who just shoot, like Mirotić is kind of the guy who comes to
maybe,
mind.
Tobias Harris is the one I can think of the most. It's about the only guy I can really
he's
think
not even,
of.
Yeah, he's kind of versatile now even.
Right. He plays three kind of most of the time when they play Horford and Embiid together. So.
Right. So I think Bielitsa maybe. But a lot of those stretch fours are becoming either full-time centers or a
versatile. Yeah, and like I said, there isn't a stretch four the Pacers would trade for that would get them an upgrade. And then if there was an upgrade one, a team wouldn't make that trade because that player's too valuable. Like they're in this weird spot where both Turner and Sabonis are probably, I would say right now, top 50, 60 players. Sabonis might be itching even towards the top, like 30, that range. And there's not really any of the stretch four types in like that range, basically.
Yeah, Sabonis will be representing the team in the game featuring the best, 26 players in the league. Let me rephrase that. Should be.
Yeah, should be. I don't know if he will. I mean, I agree he should be, but we'll see.
No, should be. Don't curse him right now. I'm already prepared to be mad about that.
Speaking of Sabonis, so Sabonis
underwent
an MRI on his knee, which is super concerning.
That came out of nowhere. Oh, okay, rant. It's time for a rant, Adam, if you don't mind.
Go ahead, Tony. It's all yours.
Hey, do you remember Pacers Heat, Adam? Did you happen to watch that game where a lot happened? You know, Vic announced his return date. There was a fight, apparently.
I remember the Pacers getting smoked. Sabonis having probably his best game of his season.
Yes, yeah, Sabonis played very well in that game. You know what else Sabonis did that game? He played 37 minutes. He was questionable before the game with the knee injury that he suffered when he fell over. I forget who it was in the Hornets game. He fell over someone hurt his knee. He came out and came back. And then he was questionable for the game. They got smacked in this game.
They were down 30 in the second quarter, right?
The Pacers outscored the Heat by 14 in the fourth quarter and still lost by 14, right? They got destroyed. Why the flying bleep did Sabonis play 37 minutes in this basketball game and potentially re-aggravate something? You know, now he misses the next game and he's getting MRIs. It seems like that was a stupid decision to play him that much. I mean, they had no chance of winning that game in the fourth quarter.
Well, it's a Nate McMillan special, which is so weird because if you look at Oladipo, right, they're being extremely cautious with him, right? They're like, at all costs, they don't want to – like, he probably maybe was ready now or what. Like, they're waiting until he's 100% healthy, it feels like. Maybe we're wrong, but it feels like that way, right? But, like, with everybody else, he seems to push them to some weird limits.
Dude, and on Twitter, we always do this, right? Every full-time beat reporter does the, why does McMillan still have this guy in blowouts games? And usually the Pacers are winning when this happens. This time they were losing. And every time I get three or four people who respond, who cares? Name one person who's gotten hurt from being in the game too long. Blah. Well, here's one. Here's your one. And I can't say Oladipo for sure last year because he got hurt not at the end of the game, but I bet it was a contributing factor. And it's like, this just can't happen. Like, you just I can't prove it. I'm not a medical expert, but it seems stupid to have a guy out there. And by the way, no one else played more than 30 minutes and he played 37. Like, it just makes no sense to me.
So can I give you one more guy?
Yeah, go ahead.
So, I mean, I don't know if I could. So, Malcolm Brogdon ended up playing 5 minutes in a fourth quarter against the Bucks. They were down, what, 20, give or take, in that game? A game they had no business winning, had no shot at winning, and they actually just got creamed even before they got on the court. And Brogdon was clearly sort of hurt from guarding Giannis any time. So, he made him guard Giannis – not made him, but he let him guard Giannis for, let's say, 20 minutes, and then he brought in a hurt or at least a wobbly Malcolm Brogdon down – let's say 15 points in a fourth quarter they didn't need to. I mean, that's just – not that it, that maybe was the only contributing factor, but now Brian's been hurt since that game pretty much. Now it's Trev, obviously, instead of back, but it's been – you know, a guy who has a history of back injuries.
Right.
Instead of being like, cautious, like, okay, we're not going to win this game. Let's not bring him back in. He brought him back in, and maybe that's one of the reasons Brogdon keeps kind of getting re-injured because of just random games where he comes back in when they're going to lose anyways and just wanting to play him, get him comfortable, and now when Brogdon is their best player and they need him to win games. Very critical.
Right. As you can see, rant. We can. I feel like we have permission to rant about this. We have reason to do so. And the MRI is clean, which is good. You know, there's a reason he's questionable. Like, the medical stuff says so. But he still feels – I don't know what this means. McMillan just said he feels something in his knee. Like, that could literally mean anything. But you have to be cautious with something like that. And even if, you know, you don't see anything in there, I think you maybe give him a game off still.
I mean, you might want to shut him down for a week, to be honest. Yeah. I mean, I –
yeah, you don't mess with knees.
No, you well, one, you've got two centers for a reason. And I know Goga is not great, and I get that. But you also have a very deep team where you could try to, you know, sneak some minutes and try to think you could play a little. You could get your car some minutes at the center off the bench if you wanted to figure that out. I mean, there's things you could do, especially if Brogdon's back makes it a little easier. And two, he's critical to this team having any postseason success, so you cannot lose him, for any extended period of time. So you want him to make sure he's 100% right. You know, not the Oladipo thing last year where they brought him back where he was still limping a little bit. Like, he must be 100% healthy before he returns.
Right, exactly. I'm comfortable holding him out if that's the case. Now, I know Sabonis will say he wants to play and stuff, so we'll see what happens.
You got to protect your guy. I mean, even you got from himself.
My gut says he doesn't play against Philly. I have no reason to say that other than gut feeling.
Yeah,
I'm just a little annoyed about that, but I was happy to see Turner take advantage of the opportunity.
So can I flip to a good move by McMillan now that we kind of
eviscerated
him for about 5 minutes?
Sorry.
I thought him starting McConnell was a really small – him, Ron McConnell and Sampson was a really smart move against the Bulls. It allowed Holiday to kind of run the bench, which is where he – I think he is more comfortable and better at. Granted, the Bulls have a terrible bench that helped, but I thought that was like a very savvy move to do that instead of sort of trying to like – because I feel like Aaron Holiday at times can be sort of – in the way to the starters, especially guys like Turner and Warren, who just – you just need to have a guy who gets in the ball and lets them kind of roll.
Yeah, we dumped on Aaron last week, so he deserves a lot of credit for this 8 of 9, 19 and 8 performance. He was fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, he was very – I would say – I mean, I would say average, probably really bad against the Heat. So that it helped that he had two pretty terrible games this week to kind of do that. But I think he is more comfortable on the bench, one, because he can take more shots because he is kind of the best offensive player out there when he's with those five guys. And two, he needs to – still learn how to defer a little more. I mean, he's getting better at it, but he still doesn't learn. When he's on the court with somebody like Warren and Lamb and Brogdon and Sabonis, he's the fifth option at times, or fourth option.
Right.
Maybe had a Turner. That's about it.
So, the Pacers have known Vic's coming back. They've probably known his date for a while, blah, blah, blah. But anyway, the weird funkiness of the timing of the first game after, like, he comes out to the fans with the announcement of switching the guards in the rotation made me go, I wonder if that means something. And I don't think it does. But I you know, I still want to know if maybe like, oh, he's experimenting more with Aaron with the bench.
I think
with Brogdon out, or the opposite's true. He's demoting him, even though Aaron actually played more minutes than TJ in this game, you know.
I think Aaron Holiday going 6 of 21 over the last two games is the reason to say, you know what, maybe don't be with the starters and only having I think he had 10 assists, which isn't terrible, but like 10 assists with guys like Warren and Sabonis is pretty simple to get because you just kind of run the pick and roll and feed him or hit him on kind of open.
My first reaction was initially, oh man, I think Aaron might be getting demoted. But then he played amazing and played more minutes, so maybe not. Just something to ponder. Back, you said another guy, Jakar. It's so crazy that the way they use Jakar, like he's not even a backup when both centers are healthy, and then they're like, hey, you're starting. But he just does this every time, right? He doesn't like it's kind of easy to do in his role, but he never wastes possessions, right? He never turns it over. He barely ever dribbles. He just moves the ball to the next guy, and then he just dunks it or makes his shots and plays good defense. Like, that's the perfect role player to just squeeze in at any time. I know he's not like raising your ceiling at all, actually, but he's definitely not lowering your floor. And when you need to plug and play against the Bulls, sweet, you got your car, throw him in, he'll help you win.
Yeah, I think he could, with Sabonis out, he's out for a period of time, could steal some minutes on the bench for sure. I
love watching Jakar.
I assume if everybody but Sabonis is back, he's not going to start. Well, I don't know, actually. Would they start him at the four, I guess?
If Brogdon was back?
Yeah,
they would just take McConnell out and start him, I bet.
You wouldn't think maybe they bring Holiday in at the four? I could see that, too. Justin Holiday, not Aaron Holiday. Sorry.
Right. I don't know. Good question.
Because it feels like if you – They need sort of – I mean, Gogo is fine against the Bulls, but Gogo is kind of up and down. I think you need a guy in case, basically, in a close game to play
right.
In a fourth quarter. But although you got the young guys some minutes, especially when they play like the T-Wolves coming up, who are not very good anyways. So I don't know what they'll do, but I think he'll get some extended minutes at least if Simone's out, let's say, two or three more games.
Yeah, start Jakar. You can give Gogo a little more run than usual, which, I mean, you said it right. He's been up and down. Mostly down recently, but had a lot of ups in the beginning of the year.
Rookie, so what do you expect?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, but I think you got to try. Like, you got to try to keep Jakar in there just for the defense he gives you. You can't get that kind of size and strength from any other guy who plays. Like, McDermott's not a good defender. Holiday's really small. Jakar gives you an element there, at least.
You get away from the center for a few minutes. Not a lot, but a few.
I wouldn't push that.
No, maybe three to five in the – in the beginning of the fourth quarter.
If Sabonis only misses one game per se, let's like just squeak him in for some Horford this run and then call it a day.
Yeah, I think that's fair. One more set before we take a break. I know it was early in the week, but TJ Warren's 36 points, I think, and we talked about the fourth show. We think that was the best offensive performance of the season by any Pacer player so far.
Is that the highest scoring performance, right?
I'm going to assume so. I can't think of anything they did higher.
Do they have that somewhere? The Pacers on their their website schedule have a leading score every game. It would take forever to.
Brogdon's had a couple 29 point games. Actually, I can do it. And let's see. He hit 29.
Oh, Sabonis has to be in the 30s at least once, right?
Warren had 31. I don't know if Sabonis. Warren had 33.
Brogdon had 30 early in the year.
Warren had 33 against the Hornets last time in November.
They just have no answer for him, apparently.
When I look at leading scorer online, that's like, I can. Pace went to every game.
It was. The second most was his 33. They've only had three 30-point games. He had the 33 against the Hornets, and then Brogdon had 30 in that loss in
Cleveland. Lamb had 30 against Denver.
Oh, that's right. There you go. So, yes. Anyway, that was a terrible research project you heard live where we had to tell you that TJ Warren, was amazing in that Hornets game. And it was a crazy game to me even because, like, the first half, the Pacers looked terrible in that game.
I was afraid they were going to go what they were. They had lost 5 of 7. They're heading the spiral.
We even said on our show, like, if they lose the Hornets, like, sound the alarm bells. Yeah, and then Warren came out in the second half and said, no, I got this. And then just didn't miss and scored every point.
Yeah, basically from the third quarter of the Denver game until that quarter, they had played 8 straight bad quarters till the third quarter of this Hornets game where they went, like, if it wasn't for the Hornets just being inept in the second quarter as well, where they scored, both teams scored 15 points, the Pacers would have lost the game by a lot, but then they just figured it out.
This is TJ Warren's second half against the Hornets.
Yes.
12 for 17 shooting, 6 for 6 from the free throw line, 3 rebounds, 2 assists, 30 points.
Yeah, most of that. Yeah, he was.
In half a game.
When he is feeling it, he is a special player. I hope he feels it against Jimmy Butler when they play next time, because that would be nice. I think that would be interesting to – now, I know we don't talk about it, but that'd be interesting to watch too is with Oladipo back and say Brogdon healthy, how they stack up against the Heat, because do you have Butler guarding Warren or do you have Butler guarding Oladipo? And then do you watch if Warren's not guarded by Butler, which I agree is a better player than we can hold him down, but if he's not, can Warren just like score? Who would be guarding him? Like who on the Heat would be guarding Warren if Butler takes on
Whoever Oladipo? They're for it, Myers Leonard maybe? I don't know.
Right. I don't know. I'm trying to think. I mean, is none.
Did you see Heat Nets? The Nets won, and the Nets fans chanted TJ Warren at Jimmy Butler.
That's stupid. Yeah, I did see it. It was stupid though.
It was pretty stupid. Kyrie Irving back, by the way. Speaking of Nets, okay.
I have one quick take. The thing about Jimmy Butler is lowering himself to being on a beef with a guy of TJ Warren's level actually hurts him and helps Warren more. Right? Warren is not on Butler's level. Never is, and maybe never will be. Butler's one of the best 15 players in the league. So. Him to have a beef with a guy who's probably like one of the 80 to 100 best players is kind of sad, I think.
My admittedly lame take is I don't care.
I just think it's funny.
People have talked about this for like 5, 6 days now. People are paying attention to the Heat. I'm like, I just don't.
We haven't done it on this show. We got it together. We got to do it for the people.
All right. My official take is they both should have been ejected, and that should have been it. Done.
I would agree. I think it was hilarious. I thought it was hilarious more.
And then no one scored the rest of the game, and it doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter.
Yeah. All right. Let's take a quick break, and then we're going to do a segment on the rotation.
Today's Locked On Pacers podcast is brought to you by EchelonFit.com. To get fit in 2020, you don't have to join a gym or pay a ton for overpriced fitness equipment. The best way to get in the best shape of your life is with Echelon. Go to EchelonFit.com to discover their EX1 connected fitness bike that offers a high-quality, at-home cycling experience at less than half the price of a Peloton. Echelon makes beautiful engineered products for everyone, busy mom and dads, first responders, elite athletes, whatever your activity level. And with the daily live and on-demand studio classes in your home, you'll never have to step foot in a gym again. You'll love Echelon, but if you aren't 100% satisfied, they'll give you your money back. Join the hundreds of thousands of men and women who are getting fit with Echelon today. And go to echelonfit.com right now, /LOMBA. That's echelonfit.com/LOMBA to learn about their limited time free Apple iPad offer. That's right. Go to echelonfit.com/LOMBA to learn about the exclusive offer and get your Echelon bike today.
Welcome back in the Locked On Pacers podcast. All right. So Oladipo is, as we speak, 16 days away.
Let me try again. There you go.
16 days away from playing and asking for the Pacers for the first time in over a year, or close to, it'll be over a year by the time he plays. So we thought it was time to do a little bit of a talk about the rotation once Oladipo returns, right? So it's been kind of, I think, it's probably the biggest question with this Pacers team, assuming everybody is completely back by the time Oladipo returns. Who plays what? Do they go 9, 10, they even try to go 11 deep at times? I think that's the question. So I think that's where to start. How many deep do the Pacers go when Oladipo returns?
Still not, maybe 10, but probably still 9, I think.
Okay, so that...
I always say that because the guys that will end up seeing their minutes cut all play the same position, right? They can't just get creative and slide a guy up to get an extra guy in.
Yeah, so who is 11 right now?
Who's 11 right now? Edmund Sumner, I believe.
Right, so...
Him or Goga is 11 and the other one's 10.
No, you're still... When Oladipo returns, are you going to be off a player still?
No.
I think you are, right? Isn't so let's do it real
quick. Adam, who 11? Okay, the 9 guys who play right now, who's the 10th guy? Goga. Who's the 11th guy? Sumner, right?
Yeah, but with Oladipo returning, there's going to be 10 guys now.
Okay. So that's the same 10th and 11th guy.
So, yeah, but that means Goga 11 and Sumner 12. That's what I mean.
Oh, with him back? I thought you meant right now.
No, with – I'm sorry. I mean, with Oladipo back.
There we go.
Who is the 11th guy? You were right. I may have
misread. All right, Goga would be number 11.
Okay, and you think Sumner 12?
Yes.
Okay, so then who's number 10, McConnell or Justin Holiday?
Not Justin Holiday, that's for damn sure. It's either TJ McConnell or Aaron Holiday, I think.
Oh, okay.
Man, I keep hearing that take. Maybe you weren't implying a take, but I think you were. That Justin Holiday could be the guy that gets squeezed out of the rotation. And, like, from an asset-only standpoint, I understand the one-year deal guy maybe being the guy you're okay with benching, and he's had some inconsistent performances. But his defense has been good, and he's been shooting really well on over 4 attempts a game from 3, and he's just so solid at an important position on the wing. And I don't know. I just think I think that the decision's just going to come down to Aaron or TJ.
I think it's going to come down to TJ or Justin, to be
because
honest.
I know that I'm probably looking at it too narrowly, because even Nate has talked about this week that some of Aaron's struggles have been that he's been forced to play the one more with Brogdon out. Sure, I actually can buy into that, but he's better as an off-ball guard next to McConnell is the implication there. So maybe you could do that. Those are the two guards, and then McDermott and, I don't know, Jeremy Lamb. But I don't know. I think they're going to try to go point guard Lamb at the two, and then your wings are Justin Holiday and Doug McDermott. That just feels more like a representation of the impact they've gotten from everybody.
So under that, it makes sense to bump Aaron Holiday, but I just think his potential and his ceiling is higher than any of those players, and you want to tap into that if you can come play.
I agree.
Right? I mean, that's
– I think that another like asset perspective, right, that's the same thing with Justin, is Aaron should be the guy you pick. And I think you could argue he's been better than McConnell, and it's whoever the team thinks. I think whoever the team thinks has been better between those two, they'll pick, even if the asset play suggests.
So I think the problem I run to is I think positionally it makes sense to bump Justin Holliday, right? Just because I think you want McConnell at the one, Aaron Holliday at the two, Lamb can play three on a bench really easily. McDermott four, Sabonis five as the kind of rotation five, right?
Right.
It just it that fits better. And McConnell has been just such an asset with the bench unit. He's been kind of huge there. And really, if you get rid of McConnell, I don't know if you trust Aaron Holliday enough to play the kind of point guard that McConnell's playing. But I agree, value-wise, you know, defensively, guy who can play in a big moment, Justin Holliday definitely wins for that one most of the times. I mean,
right.
Do they try to go super small? I don't know if that's even going to work. It's a good position to be in, certainly, right, to be – you know, having to decide playing your 10th or 11th guy, but it's kind of confusing, I think, to be honest, because really from, I think McConnell, Aaron, and Justin Holliday have really all kind of been at the same level, right? They've been good at different things, but I think they've all deserved to kind of play, I guess, it feels right. Like
this is, Will first said it best. He said, a good problem to have is still a problem, and they're going to hit the problem part eventually and have to deal with it. And I don't know how, but I think one of them will be out, and that is going to be hard, I think, to deal with, because they've all played – they've all stated a great case to be playing.
Yeah, I think, though, the one thing you look at is I think Justin and TJ can better adjust to not being in the flow of a game constantly, right? So, like, let's say they're DMP for five games, right? I think they'll be better off kind of keeping up and kind of being the professionalism one, because they have the contract – they're both kind of coming up for contract next year if they go – and I think McConnell will probably be picked up for his option, but they both will be – could be free agents, so they're looking for the next deal and staying in the league. Where Aaron Holliday, I think, out of the kind of flow of playing every day, might, you know, tinker, especially as kind of a second year player who is trying, you know, feels like he probably should play, and he probably is like the highest ceiling of those three guys by far. I mean, it's not even like close.
Yeah,
and when he's on his best, it's like, I mean, you said it. I mean, I think you said a while ago that he was the most important player on the bench when he's at his best.
Yeah. Yeah, he's been awesome in certain games this year. He's won them a few games literally by himself. All right, let's. I want to shift this a little bit.
Okay.
So, I think it might be easier to do it this way. The starters are obvious, right? Brogdon, Oladipo, Warren in the centers.
Can I just say how excited I am for that lineup to see what happens? It is going to be a bloodbath offensively.
Right.
I mean,
The only two guys we both consider bench locks are Lamb and McDermott. That's it. That's kind of crazy.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's not going to happen because he's shooting so well. But, like, got in a really, really cold streak for a few weeks. I could see him getting cut out of the rotation.
No way.
I'm not saying he's going to. I mean,
it's felt like McDermott's been in a cold stretch for like 2 or 3 weeks now, and he's still at 44% this year.
I haven't felt that way at all, to be honest.
With you, who I had to like barter that he should even play last year. What a turnaround.
He was not this good last year.
This good last year. I'll say that, but he could always do this. Yeah. Since what do you think he's shooting from three since, let's say, the 20th of December?
High 30s, like 30s.
37.
Okay.
37.
So pretty good.
Pretty good. Pretty close.
No, here's the thing I could say.
35% since Christmas.
So
still over 44.
I could see the Pacers situationally swapping McDermott and Holiday out, especially in a playoff game. In a playoff game where you need some of that defense, apparently, for something. I don't know. I could see that.
No, Doug McDermott will play every game.
No, I'm not saying he won't play. I'm saying they could switch him out like in certain moments to get, you know what I mean, the offense-defense thing almost.
I guess. So that's why I think those three guys, the thing I said at the beginning when you said 9 or 10 guys – between Justin Holliday, Aaron, and TJ, you can't get creative to get to 10 where you can play all three and like have McDermott or Lamb play center. Like that just won't work.
Can I ask you one more question? Tell you one more stat too. You realize Holiday is only about 0.4 of a point behind McDermott in 3-point shooting percentage, right? Justin Holliday is at 40% on 4.3 attempts.
What? McDermott is at 44% and Holiday's 40. Not even at 40.
He's at 39.6, isn't he?
That's 4%, not 0.4%.
Yeah, I meant – well, I guess yes. I meant
that's a huge difference.
0.4 of a percentage point, I guess, or of the of a point.
No. What?
Never mind. It's 4%, yes.
Yes, it's a lot. It's a lot.
I mean, that is a lot.
4% is the difference between – I want to give a fun what 4% gives you with the Pacers. 4% – that's not a good one. Never mind. Irrelevant.
It's probably about a point per game.
On their volumes, it is, about a point per game. just pretty important when that's all you do.
It depends defensively, though, what that other positive on that end. But it's not – whatever. Keep going. Sorry. I interrupted your point.
Yeah, McDermott, those guys are all locks. And the reason that that's why it's so hard is because the other three guys are all guards. And you can't just slide someone up to center. So,
yeah. Could you get away with McDermott at center? Probably not.
No. No way. Unless the other team's center is also like that. So, that's why I think they'll stick with nine guys.
Who's Boston center?
I'm asking. Boston center?
Late backup center.
Enes Kanter.
Yeah, you can't get away with any McDermott guarding Enes Kanter on right, they got the first round.
Enes Kanter is a bad NBA player, and you still can't have McDermott out there on him.
You might be able to just murder them offensively, though.
You could try. But you know how you beat Kanter is just put him in any pick and roll, and I don't want McDermott setting those screens.
That's true. He wants the bonus setting those screens.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know who they're going to pick, and I think we said this forever ago on the show. And another factor here, and I think, I don't know how much Oladipo plays back-to-back. There's only four more, though, after his return, and how many minutes he gets right away. But I don't think that matters because Lamb can play a ton of minutes if Vic's only playing like 25 minutes in the game.
Yeah, I was thinking Vic will probably play 25 a game for the first couple of games, I assume.
Yeah, but Lamb will just play his usual 30. That's not a big deal. So the other thing is I think that we said earlier in the year, it's like a tryout for these guys. And all of a sudden, you know, early in the year, you know, there was struggles for McConnell and both Holiday brothers. At times, you know, you think, oh, okay, you know, these guys are inconsistent. And then all of a sudden the bench is amazing. And then Holiday just starts killing it. And Justin's been solid for like 2.5 months now. And they've just nailed the tryouts. And so now you have to, it's almost like a punishment. And that's what makes it so hard for me to figure out who it's going to be, is because in the roles they've had up to this point, where you're trying to decide, okay, which one of you deserves minutes once there are less to give. There's so many justifications to decide. Justinifications to decide who should and shouldn't play.
That was the worst pun I've ever.
I was looking at his name when I said it. I said, that's a lot of similar letters.
The other problem is, right, none of them are tradable, right? I mean, that's the other part of it. Like, could you flip them for an asset? Kind of ruin.
Well, Aaron is tradable, but should not do that.
No, but like you couldn't like because they don't have their first round pick this year, for example. But you can't really steal a late first rounder from anybody. Like,
not even close.
Yeah, no, right. Not even close. So
not even close. Unless you're getting like long term salary, but even then, they don't make enough money that it's like such a bad contract they would take back.
Yeah, I have a feeling that I don't know why it feels like Justin Holiday will be the one put out.
Certainly possible, but I extremely don't think so. Before the season, I would have thought it was him, but I don't know.
It seems to make the most sense, I guess. Maybe I'm completely wrong.
I'll have to look close at the TJ McConnell, Aaron Holiday minutes until Vic is back.
Yeah. So I guess I hit it real quick, but what do you think Vic plays probably? What do you finish with minutes per game? I think he plays probably 20 to 25 to start the first couple of weeks, but what do you think?
Me too. Until the All-Star break, I bet he cracks 25 maybe one time.
You think he plays more than 32 minutes in a game all regular season at least?
The whole season?
Regular season. Not postseason.
Maybe by like April, so yeah, probably by then, right? That's far enough out.
And then what do you expect when he comes back? I mean, I'm not expecting 17-18 Vic, but do you think he could be three quarters of that to start? Like, what do you I mean? It certainly won't even be close to that. Like, he's never going to be here again. I mean, that's what I'm trying to figure out.
You know, like, the problem for me with this is, like, I've wanted to write about this, but there's not enough data points, like, of similar players to Vic to do it. With this exact injury, and like the relevant the relevant case we used to use to discuss this is Tony Parker for like return timeline and stuff. And you could look at some stats and see how much Tony Parker declined in production, but like he was also 37 or something like that. So it's different. He was 10 years older. So I don't really have a good baseline to say, oh, he'll be this much worse, or I expect him to be between this and this much worse, which makes it harder for me. I know I'm not a fool. He's going to be not as effective as he was, like you said, in 17-18. But I think he can be, you know, as good as he was in Oklahoma City, for example. You know, I don't know why he can't be that good and then slowly get back to the level he's been in the past.
So here's what I'll say. I think he'll be less explosive the rest of the season. I think it just because naturally he will be. But I think the thing to watch is he going to be as good a three-point shooter as he was, which has nothing to do really with the explosiveness. It really has to do with the fact that he's a quick shooter and can especially now have better spacing too around him, so he'll get more 3-point shots. Because if he's able to shoot in the high 30s out of 6 threes a game, he'll be fine. I mean, even if he's, you know, even if he's not able to get to the rim the same rate, maybe it's more like a 44 to 45 from there. So I think that's the thing to watch. And two,
that's what he did last year and the year before that.
Is he now has the ability to defer a little bit, right? So like he has right. Offensive plays around him. Will he just kind of be like, no, I don't need to be in this pick and roll play. I'll be the decoy out here in the corner and I'll shoot, you know, let's say 40% from the corner. That way I'm like the perfect stretch guy. And then at times I'll kind of sneak in for a dunk, but I'll let everybody else kind of work and I'll just sort of play with the offense for now. And then maybe the key with him is I'll become the guy at the end of games that will come up with a big shot, because that's what they're missing right now, really. Right?
Yeah. What if instead of a 16-5 guy that Vic was last year, for example, he's a 15-6.5 guy or something.
No, he was 19-5 last year, remember.
I'm looking at shot attempts. I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm looking at points.
No, you are right. You are absolutely right that that is his points. What if instead of taking 16.5 shots and dishing out 5.5 assists, that's like 15-6.5, like I said.
What if that's more like 12-8? No, seriously.
That could work with how well Brogdon shoots off ball, but then you start to he starts to get defended differently, you know? Like I still want him to be driving with the same volume that he has.
Yeah, I think with the better players around him, it won't be as important. Like, I think that was really important with players to play up on him because it allowed him, because of his shooting and because he didn't have the same spacing, right? So if a guy thinks, oh, he's not going to burn by me, I'll play him on off, he at least has the ability to make the pass to somebody who can make a good shot, right? So, like, even if he drives in and well-defended where, you know, before because the guy's in space, he kick out to Warren into a Turner that can make a three versus before kicking to Thad Young, who was, like, wildly up and down for three.
Right. So I'm on Vic's basketball reference page, right?
Yeah.
And they have the articles that are linked there, you know?
Yeah.
And the first one I see here says, it's from the Kings fan side. It says, Kings trade idea, Bogdanovich for Miles Turner. Like, these people just make shit up. Like, what?
Yes.
Why would the Pacers ever do that?
Yes, I would agree. Why would they?
The exact trade is Bogdan Bogdanovich and Harry Giles, two expiring contracts, Adam. A second-round pick for Miles Turner. What a trade. The Pacers could get way worse and lose both guys.
You know what?
That is great.
I saw some bullshit trade on Twitter where like, the Pacers got Derrick Rose and Andre Drummond. Like, what the fuck? I mean, they're getting up Miles Turner and somebody else for Drummond and Derrick Rose.
You know what? I just thought of it. I wish from trade day, like the 15th on, we roast two fake trades like every week. That would have been so fun.
I mean, that's
what we can still do that until the trade then. Like, can we do that?
Yeah,
people just make stuff up.
Okay, from now on, we'll do it. And right before we do our game preview, we'll do a stupid trade of the week.
Stupid thing I saw this week. And they're all going to be Turner trades because everyone thinks he's available for some reason.
He's not available. He scored 27 points the other day. He's not available.
Yeah. All right, let's look at Leon.
Yeah.
I'm done with trades already. Let's look at
anyways, let's take a quick break and we're going to preview this week's games. All right, Tony. So they play four games this week, but they play three teams. So we're going to do this kind of in three segments, right? Because we don't need to do like two game previews for the T-Wolves on Wednesday and Friday, correct?
Yes, easy peasy for us. That is so weird. A home road back to back in the NBA.
I know it is very, especially because it's
so rare.
Not in their conference too. It's even rarer.
Yeah, it is weird. I mean, they're not very far apart though.
No, I mean Minnesota should be in the East realistically. Yeah. That's a whole other question.
Right.
So anyway, so they played two of these teams already. So they played Philly 2 weeks ago and Denver 2 weeks ago about, or maybe
actually, yeah, they played a few days apart.
Yeah. So the first game they play is Philly Monday at home. It is a 7 p.m. start. Embiid is not going to play. He is out for, probably 2 or 3 weeks at least.
He's being reevaluated in 2 weeks, probably longer.
So I wouldn't say do this, but if you want to see why Embiid isn't playing, go look at his finger online. I'm sure that is disgusting.
Don't do it. It's gross.
His finger is pointing in the opposite direction it should point. So that means we'll see a lot of Al Horford. Just for some reference, in their last game where they lost to the Mavericks by 18 points, they played – Horford at the five, he played 32. I think Mike Scott slotted in somehow at probably the 3 or 4. Tobias Harris played 35 minutes. Richardson played 35, and Simmons played 37. So it's kind of
something interesting. I saw Sixers fans complaining about that may be a factor here. So these two teams played the day before New Year's, yes. And I'm using that game as more barometer because Embiid did not play in that game. They started Kyle O'Quinn, our favorite, and by our I mean mine.
Kyle O'Quinn.
What a great former Pacer Kyle O'Quinn is. But now they have Embiid out for a while, right? So they're kind of, you know, looking at it more from not a one-game standpoint, and that's why Scott is starting. But their style didn't change as much. And a lot of Sixers fans are complaining. Like, Mike Scott posted up multiple times, and he's not very good at that. So that's something to keep an eye on, is if they keep trying to do a style, like not as much of a style change as they should. You know, they can do different stuff without Embiid, right? They can have Simmons be more of a post player and be more of a screener. But they had Mike Scott posting up so much that people were like actively enraged about that, and they got smoked by Dallas. So it'll be interesting to see if they continue to do something like that. But they have options down low, and I think maybe they'll go with O'Quinn to match the Pacers' size like they did last time.
So I'm going to be honest. I don't think they're that good without Embiid. I think
– Woo!
I mean, obviously. But I know they got Horford as the help, but I think – and I know they even beat Boston where he played – he didn't play the game, right? He hurt his thumb or his finger against Oklahoma City. So – and I know Boston's a good team and stuff like that, but I just think – especially at home, and we saw last time the Pacers should beat this team because Embiid is the kryptonite for Miles Turner. Even if Sabonis doesn't play in this game, Miles Turner's kryptonite is that he gets pulling every effing pump fake from Embiid and ends up with two fouls 5 minutes in the game and doesn't play. And Embiid just kills him. I mean, he takes an ungodly amount of free throws against him. I mean, let's look at the last game they played against
15.
Him. 15. 15 free throws. I mean, last year he had a couple 20 free throws against the Pacers. Like, I think he is the difference. Besides him, the Pacers are – match up very well against the team because they don't have a ton of like offensive scores. So you could sag off Simmons and stuff like that. And basically you're looking at offense surrounded around Tobias Harris and Al Horford, which isn't really anything that special. So, I mean, that's why I think they should be able to beat this team pretty easily without Embiid. Now with Embiid, this team's a whole other team and they're,
he's amazing.
He's one of the best 8 players in the league. And that's what happened when you're missing one of those players. So,
right.
But I think
they could win. They were up 36 on them without Embiid last time. And I get it's different when you've had a little more time to familiarize without him, but, like, that's a ton of points.
They just don't have enough offense, it feels like, without Embiid. I mean, I'm going to look at the Boston game, I guess, without him. The big scorer was Josh Richardson, who had 29 points. But I don't feel like that's going to happen every night. Like, is that – I don't know. It doesn't feel like that's, like –
gosh.
Right? You can –
Josh Richardson. He was their leading scorer in the Pacers game when no Embiid. He had 20.
Yeah, I mean, I think if he's the leading scorer, you're going to be good, I have a feeling.
Yeah, I think the Pacers will definitely win. Even if Sabonis doesn't play, I think they're going to win. That's how good I think Embiid is. You don't go 36 against teams you're not substantially better than. And they can rely on Simmons to create a lot more, but, you know, we saw that, you know, Brogdon can force him to defend or can defend him a little better than the Pacers have been able to before with his size, and they've been making him miss at the rim, and he doesn't have as many options without Embiid, right? I think it's going to be up to him to be passing more and trying to get the Sixers open threes, and they're just not a good, you know, even without Embiid, who doesn't shoot a ton of threes, but they do not have the shooters that they require to effectively have Ben Simmons just destroy like that, so they're going to be very limited in what they can do.
Yeah, I think I want to jump to butchers. I think Al Horford's a butcher to watch. They
got to get him more shots to be a butcher for me.
Yeah, I guess I feel like he'll have, like, let's say 12 points and 6 assists, which is just, like, a solid
for him. Fair enough. Yes, he will.
And that might be, you know, like I said, I don't think really they're going to – any of these guys are going to beat them, and I'm probably going to eat my words when they lose by 20. anyways, but I just think he's probably the best bet, I guess. Maybe he has a nice night where he goes, like, 5-7-3 or something like crazy like that and just has one of those really good games.
Are you feeling okay, Adam?
Why?
They're playing against Tobias Harris.
Oh my God! They have
a Pacers killer on the roster.
You know what? He hasn't killed them since last.
He hasn't. You're right.
Like he was in a Pistons uniform. So I guess I forgot about that one. You're right. You know, you're right.
He's my guy. Wow. He is my guy. I just know he can go off and score, and he hasn't done that against the Pacers this year, which they deserve a lot of credit for playing good D on him. He only played 23 minutes last time they played, but like. I've seen him score a ton in December, right? He had 26-point game, 33, 26, 31, 20, 35, 24. These are all in 1 month. Like, he clearly can and has the potential to be a much bigger scorer than he was in that Pacers game when he only had 9. I think if they try to get him more involved, you know, TJ Warren deserves a ton of credit for, you know, giving a damn on D this year and being better than he has been with the Suns, but still is just okay. And Harris, I think, can get going if they try. So he's mine.
All right, can I tell you who my butcher is or who my X Factor is? Sorry.
Is it TJ Warren?
No, I think, and I'm going to blow it early. I think it's the bench unit.
You only get one and you're going early, huh?
I know. Well, so here's the bench right now for the Sixers.
You're lazy because if you use it on the Timberwolves, you get 2 games out of it.
It's fine. I T-Wells are terrible. I can pick many of X factors, I'm sure. So it's Matisse Thybulle, frickin' Korksmaz. I'm going
to say this every time. Their bench sucks.
Norville Pell, who is a rookie, who played 15 minutes last time. And James Ennis, your favorite guy, I feel like. And then Trey Burke.
I used to like James Ennis more than I do now, but yes.
So there's not a single guy on that bench who I'm scared of offensively. Thybulle, I think, is a decent defensive player, but Trey Burke might be the best offensive player on that bench, and I like the Trey Burke TJ McConnell matchup.
Yeah, they can get away with it when they have Simmons and Embiid, because they'll have one out there at all time to give them like credible offense. But Horford, for all the things I love Al Horford for, is not a self creator or creator for others, so they get kind of stuck when.
I don't think he's the same defender on guards he was at his peak. Too.
Yeah, so they rely on like Josh Richardson to be their primary creator sometimes with these bench units, which he's like actually underrated in that role, but he's not perfect for it, so it's a little tough.
So what's your X factor?
Aha! Yes, you have asked me this, and I should have known you were gonna. Mine is TJ Warren. Actually, he has been incredible against the Sixers this year, and I'm sure they're going to try to game plan a little differently after he's killed them two games in a row. If he can continue to be a very efficient 20-point-plus scorer against the Sixers, the Pacers will win again.
I think that's a fair bet. So the other big thing on this game, one, the Pacers sit half a game back of Philly for the 5 seed, so this game could put them ahead of Philly.
I'm cutting off. Oh, you're going to say the tiebreaker thing.
Yes, they'll give them a 2-1 lead. They play Philly one more time in March, so they will not have the tiebreaker for sure, but that way they can't lose it, theoretically speaking.
It would have to go to conference standing.
Which, right? Conference standing right now, Pacers 17-11, Philly 17-8, so that doesn't mean anything right now.
Yeah, but having the chance to clinch it in that last game would be humongous.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, very rarely do teams tie in record just ends up sorting itself out for the end of the year, right? I mean, I don't know how much – I don't know how much I've seen a team tie, especially for like a big 4-5 seed. I guess there was that year in the West where everybody's won like 52 games, right? Wasn't that one weird year? More importantly, put them at the 5 seed. I don't know if Toronto plays on a Monday, but it gives them – I think probably doesn't say play tonight, but it gives them a shot to kind of push to the 4 seed. And really, after some bad games by the Heat, since the Pacers they demolished the Pacers, the 3-6 is starting to tighten, and really the 2-6 is starting to tighten. We'll see if Boston can play less games, win some more, but it's starting to get tighter where the Pacers have a shot if they go on a nice little run here to maybe push it at the 2-3 spot.
Yeah, getting tiebreaker against anyone in that group is important. Against the Heat, it's incredibly unlikely, but they can get it against pretty much anyone else. So.
Yep, and they played Toronto twice after this, too, so that would be big, too.
They're one win against Toronto away, I believe. They can only tie the Heat. They are ahead of the Celtics, and if they win this, ahead of the Sixers. So doing well in that department, Adam.
And beating the good teams helps you gain games on those teams. That's also the key.
Yes, yeah.
The untalked about thing about winning against
good teams. So if Sabonis plays, I would put – Pacers at 95% chance to win, and if Bonus does not play, I'd put them at about a 70% chance to win.
I'm with you there. I think they probably win no matter what, like you said, but I think Bonus plays is probably a for sure win. All right, so the Pacers next game is they play
next two games.
So I was gonna say a weird back to back game where they play at Minnesota on Wednesday and then come back home to play Minnesota on Friday. Minnesota has been in quite a tailspin, and they're now 11th in the West. They are 15-3. I'm looking at the last games since – I'm just looking at the little, like, b-ball ref kind of thing. They basically have won, like, 5 games since the beginning of December, which is not good.
They won 2 games in December total.
They won 2 games in December total. Okay, they won a couple recently.
That's bad.
Yeah. This team, at one point, I think was, like – where did they start? Like, I feel like 7-2.
They entered December 10-8.
Okay, so they were,
and then they went 2-12.
They are really competing for that 8 seed in the West, which is sort of like completely wide open.
They're still not that far out of it.
Yeah, I guess they're only 2 back, but they're between them and like 5 teams that I
own. Yeah, but who has it? The Grizzlies or something like?
No, but I think the Spurs, Blazers, and Suns are better than them at least.
Yes, I agree with that.
So I think that's the difference. If they had like a couple game lead, I feel different about it, I guess. But
so the Grizzlies are. Sorry, we're getting.
No, you're fine.
Conference standings. I'm cutting you off. Grizzlies are. Set 22nd in offense and 16th in defense, so they're like okay to bad at both. But I'm just shocked to see a Karl Anthony Towns team at 22nd in offense.
So here's the thing, Towns.
I know he's been out for a while, but man, is he good?
Yeah, he's been on my fantasy team, and so this has been a really tough couple weeks for me going on now.
He's got a knee injury right now too.
So he's day to day right now. They've said that for about a week now. He's out with a knee and an illness. Did not play on Saturday against the Rockets. it's your guess is good as mine if he plays by Wednesday. They've been saying he's day to day for the better part of a week now. So maybe he plays one of the two games. I don't really know. But if he doesn't play, I mean, this could be a
easiest one ever.
I'm trying to think of what other team I blew.
Wiggins can score now. Like, Wiggins is actually good, which is weird. but outside of that, they don't have a ton of reliable offensive
Philly creators. On New Year's Eve or Utah on Thanksgiving Eve? I guess I love the pre-holiday games.
Who? Wiggins?
No, the Pacers. You said easiest win by far, I think.
Oh, yeah.
As easy as Utah right. before Thanksgiving or Philly before New Year's, I don't know.
Yeah, like with no Cat, again, they're just so – like Wiggins can score, and I want to give him a lot of credit for turning his game around this year and not being the absolute most inefficient Steve ever. And he's trying on defense. Good for him. You know, good for the Wolves and him, but he's still just not quite all there for me with the pieces, even at 23.5 points per game. And
Is he your butcher if Wiggins doesn't play – or Towns doesn't play, sorry?
Yeah, he's your only choice, right? Because – other than that, you know, I think Robert Covington has a case because his defense is just ridiculous. Like TJ Warren's going to score 5 points again in this game. Unless Covington is doing some weird, like, not full-time man-to-man stuff, like TJ Warren's not going to score in this game. But, yeah, it's Wiggins. He's the only guy who can score for them. So, the Thunder fans know how annoying Wiggins is. He goes crazy against them all the time. And if he has one of those games, the Wolves will win, but. He's their only guy besides Cat. Cat's my butcher if he plays.
So can I read you Gorgui Dieng's last 13 games?
Real fast? I have been hearing he's been playing well, though I do not know these numbers. So I'm excited.
Well, you heard the same thing on the same podcast I heard it, I'm sure. 13.4 points and 9.1 rebounds over the last 13 games for Gorgui Dieng on 27 minutes. I think those are all the games Towns has been out.
Yeah, good for him. Yeah. I mean, he's still overpaid, but like, good for him for proving that he still belongs in the league.
So I will say, I think Covington was my butcher.
Yeah, that's a great choice. He's so good.
Yeah, so the Covington, I guess, and we talked about stretch fours pitchers could use. Covington's a great player.
You know who doesn't need a center? The Timberwolves. They have Gorgui Dieng. Adam, why would they need a
– No, but could you somehow package – I know this is crazy, but like Sumner holiday package to get him or something like that? Get some salary, maybe throw a first round. I mean, he would be awesome, the Pacers. That's the only thing.
So here's another problem with the Wolves. I know we just did our butchers. Jeff Teague, man, I love you because you're from Indy, but he just hasn't been what they needed and – his stats actually look okay, and I think we all know in Indiana that Jeff Teague's stats are not reflective of what he's actually giving you. So when he doesn't have the ball and when he's on defense, he's just not helpful.
Yeah, so the question I have with him is, you think if he had been on a team that was willing to dump him or was on a better team, like, you know, George Hill signed with the Kings, they got up in the Cavs kind of range, he would actually be looking better, right? So like if he was playing like the George Hill kind of role, let's say with the Cavs previously or now with the Bucks, he'd have a more favorable view of him, right? Because I don't think he's that. I don't think he's good. Like he's nowhere near his peak, which was when he was with Atlanta.
Still solid NBA point guard.
But right, he's still solid. I just think he gets a bad rep because he's with a terrible team, and he's kind of a bad contract to have.
He is a great ball handler in the pick and roll, and that's a very important skill that will keep him in the league. I think probably for 4 more years at least. So on a team that can feature him more in that way and doesn't have Karl Anthony Towns as the guy who should have the ball. You know, that it's not, I'm not saying the Wolves shouldn't give Cat the ball every time they can, but like a different team or like if Teague was coming off the bench and playing the Catless minutes or something, you know, like the Pistons, you know, I don't think he's better than Reggie Jackson necessarily, but if he, like if his role was just dribble around a drum and a screen every possession, I think he'd.
I've got you that perfect team for him next year, but maybe making like, let's say 8 to 10 range.
Yeah.
The Orlando Magic. That's the perfect team.
For them. They would love to have Jeff Teague. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he's like the perfect fit for them. Just kind of like he can play a little bench point guard if you need to. Don't have to start every time he play clutch.
Right.
Dubek can just be a point guard with some.
But with Turner, the Pacers can just neutralize him with drop coverage because his thing is all pick and roll.
Assuming Brogdon
and that's too. And we have officially named every good Timberwolves player by only naming 4 players. Good
job. Yeah. So what is your X factor, real fast?
Let's see. If no Cat, you know, I think Sabonis and Turner are both quality picks, right? They're really relying on who's even besides Gorgui Dieng. They play Naz Reid sometimes. I know that a lot of people are excited about him. Noah Vonleh is getting minutes in the post for them, but they don't really have a ton of good post play at all without Cat. Man, this is a sad group of.
Remember when Bates Diop killed the pace? No, Okogie. Sorry, Okogie killed the pace.
Yes, Okogie is good.
Yeah, he's good.
Josh Okogie will be really good one day.
Remember when we thought he was going to be – I mean, maybe he'll be really good someday, but like when he thought like he was like going to be great.
Remember when we picked Kata Bates-Diop in the Locked On Mock Draft?
Yes, that's why I remember his name.
Hey, 26 games, 36% shooting from deep, 7 points a game.
Yes.
He's looking like an okay player, just not a first-round pick. Whoops. Sorry, everybody.
Who did they take in the draft instead of him?
Aaron Holiday.
Oh, so that's going to work out a little bit. And that is my X-Factor. Speaking of X-Factors, that is my X-Factor. Off the bench, shocker, the T-Wolves also don't have a great bench. And so this is Aaron Holiday's opportunity to shine, continue a little hot streak into the Oladipo return, hopefully, earn him, like you seem to think he's could be cut of the rotation, possibly, and I'm not saying you say he's going to, but could be. So it's the chance to sort of prove himself in the next 4 or 5 games that he should be in the rotation, give McMillan a choice that they can't not play him, basically.
My official answer between the two bigs is Miles Turner. By the way.
It's fine. You can pick both. That's fine. I mean, I think
I have chosen Miles Turner, and I'll choose Miles Turner for both games.
You think they win both games? You think they lose one?
If Cat plays both, I think they split home and home.
Yeah, it's really hard to beat a team twice in a row unless they're just terrible. I mean,
terrible. So, but like a lot of the – remember you said this in the playoffs last year, like having the best player is pretty important, and Cat is easily the best player. Like,
I think it's overrated, to be honest,
he is so good. I think he's one of the most underrated offensive players in the game. I get his defense, like he doesn't really try all the time. Especially last year. I think that's less the case this year, but I think he is just ridiculous on offense.
Yeah, I mean, I think Cat's really, really, really good. Don't get me wrong. I just think that whole the best player on the team thing might be overrated, to be honest, that take.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you meant
Cat. I think Cat's a great player. I think Cat is – Cat.
You
is,
said it last year. No,
I know I did. I'm saying I might have been wrong.
You were right. The Celtics swept the series, so. you were right.
Well, they had the best player in that series, so yes. Yeah, anyway, they did. Anyways, I think Cat is a guy dying to be on a team with some other good players, to be honest. But I think to be honest, it's hard to beat a team twice in a row, no matter who they are, unless they're just like maybe the Knicks, essentially, or in the league.
Well, they might as well be the Knicks without Cat.
No, that's also true. So, but I think it's just hard to know to beat a team twice in a row. Teams adjust, yeah. Teams have some pride. I don't know. It helps that if they beat them the first time, they'll be on the road, so then they'll get them at home, which will help, obviously. Right. But I feel like they should win both, but we'll see. They seem to blow a lot of stupid games.
You want to know how long – oh, man. This is going to sound crazier than it actually is. The last time the Pacers played in Minnesota, Jimmy Butler was on the Timberwolves.
I remember that. That was beginning.
Isn't that crazy? He's been on two teams since then.
Oh, my God. That is kind of crazy. Well,
yeah. If Cat doesn't play, they win both. If Cat plays both, they win one.
Done. I think that's fair. I'm with you on that. All right. So the next game is they start there. Was it a 5-game road trip or 6-game?
Off out west.
Five game out west.
Longest road trip of the season.
Do they play another one out west later on? Maybe it's only 4 games.
Or it's only 4.
Okay, you're right. It is 5-game road trip, but it's not out west in late February.
Oh, this is their longest. They get every East team gets the one long west road trip. This is the Pacers.
Yep. So they go. Played Denver on Sunday night. They lost Denver. What was it? I don't remember the score now.
How impossible is their Sunday, Monday back-to-back? Denver, Utah, the altitude back-to-back?
That happens every year to them, I feel like.
That's awful, man.
But they always cream Utah, so let's just be okay. I had to say
free win. I love it. I love it.
So Denver, we haven't done any numbers yet, but let's do it real fast. Denver.
I did them on the Timberwolves. I said their offense and defense.
Okay, you did. I don't remember you saying that, but it's fine. So I think Denver's worth saying because they're 9th in offense and 12th in defense. They are, what do we want to say? The 5th best team in the league behind the Bucks, the two LA teams and the Rockets.
You could do that. I mean, I would put them up there in that tier. They're really good.
Yeah, I think we said before, I think they're the tier below the two LAs in Milwaukee, but I think they're a really good team. And they're honestly probably one player away from, like, breaking in that tier. Or
hey, did you see on Twitter that CJ Miles' wife said the Nuggets called up CJ Miles and asked him if he'd be ready for the playoffs? So
is that
former Pacer on a 2-seed would be pretty cool.
Gotta be honest, it doesn't make the difference I'm talking about. I mean, he's a good player, but I don't think that makes a difference.
Right. Yeah, they're just really solid, right? We saw that. I mean, I know that game – was so weird with the offensive rebounds. But they're just, like, Jokic didn't even have to be like Jokic. He had no assists. He didn't shoot that well from the field, and he still was really good. You know, they just have a lot of talent all over the court. And, you know, we've talked about a few teams that are like the Pacers in that way. They're just solid in a lot of ways, and they can be – they don't have to – like, they will, but they don't have to just hammer Jokic to beat you, and that's what makes him pretty good.
Yeah, last the Pacers played them. It was pretty close till what I would say the fourth quarter, right? The Pacers, I believe, maybe I'm trying to remember. I think they trailed by two at the half.
But they got it to five-ish in the fourth, and there's that one Nuggets possession where they got like four offensive rebounds.
Yeah, this was the game where they just got crushed on the boards.
That's yeah, like, and then they finally scored. It was probably the most deflating possession I think I've seen in a regular season basketball game.
That one against Heat still pretty terrible.
Yes. It was like that, but with twice as many and there was like 4 minutes left instead. But
yeah.
Yeah, it was something, and I think the thing that stood out to me is that, you know, the Nuggets have talent at every position, they can do a lot of stuff, but at the same time they have enough holes that you can there will be one guy out there that you're able to score on. And every starter on the Pacers shot pretty well because there are moments when they're matched up with a guy that they think, yeah, I can score on them. And the bench did pretty poor, but the starters in that game did a nice job of exploiting matchups and getting up good shots.
Here's the thing, though. I don't know if this is going to be a one-off game for him, but Michael Porter Jr. literally played out of his goddamn
mind. That was ridiculous.
And I thought it was going to be –
it was like Kevin freaking Durant.
I thought it was going to be like the moment, oh, this is when Michael Porter becomes like the guy we all thought he was going to be. He's going to be a little runner. He especially had 19 points 2 games before. That's like, oh, he's starting to like make a run. And then he's – since then, 7 points, 4 points, 2 points, 0 points. And today, I think he had 11.
Literally any of those numbers, and the Pacers win that game by double digits.
Yeah, so I don't know what we're going to get. Are we going to get the Michael Porter with a Kevin Durant who is coming of – a LeBron KD mix, or we can get the Kevin Porter who is averaging like 5.5 points a game and is that was, okay bench player.
That was not yeah. that is a bigger factor than I have brought up.
That's
a
good so point. I don't know if that's my butcher. It's not my butcher, but it might be my X factor. I don't know what I want to call it, but it's that's just something to watch. Is that is what
my how well he plays again.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I guess another thing to watch is that Paul Millsap missed Saturday's game against the Cavs. If Millsap doesn't miss games, that'll be kind of important because he's
good. He's a good basketball player. Yeah, the I think the Pacers in this game, this will be my bench X factor game because they have a solid group of second units for Denver. You know, between Porter, locked on Pacers favorite Jeremy Grant, Mason Plumlee, Monte Morris, and they can even just happen to, like Malik Beasley didn't play the last time these guys played. He's good. Torrey Craig's good. Juancho Hernan Gomez is good. Like, they can – I just probably said his name with the H wrong in Spanish. I'm sorry, everybody. Anyway, they could just toss in any of those guys. Like, they're really deep with their second unit, and that allows them to do well against a lot of teams, including the Pacers. You know, Justin Holiday couldn't get it going. McConnell did all right, but you know, not great. McDermott only made threes, missed a bunch of twos, and Goga even had to play in this game and didn't do too well either. So they just need to get a little more from their bench to get this one done.
Yeah, so you want to pick Jokic or Murray as your butcher?
I don't want to pick Jamal Murray anymore. I love Jamal Murray. I think he's really good, but I just can't do it. Like, has he ever been really good against the Pacers? It seems like they know how to defend him.
Yeah, I don't know if he just has bad games or whatnot, but I mean,
I think he's really good. I just like he had a very unremarkable 22 points.
Yeah,
but yeah, you can pick Jokic. 39 if you want. He's clearly the guy to pick.
Yeah, I mean, I don't mind picking Murray. I think Murray's a good player.
Okay, I'll take Jokic.
I think Murray was a difference in the playoff run last year for them, for sure.
He's one really good game away against Portland from them being a conference finals team last year.
Yeah, I mean, who did they beat in the first round last year? I'm trying to remember now.
They beat the San Antonio Spurs.
Right. He had a really
look, good man. Game. I get dumping on that series for going seven games against the seventh seed, but like it's Popovich in the playoffs. Like
he had a I remember he had a really good game 6 and 7 of that series.
Yes, he did. Jokic's assists would be second on the Pacers only to Brogdon. He is an incredible passer. I know he had zero. I don't care. He just changes the way you defend. You look at the ball a little bit, you look at your man a little bit more than you normally do. You're just a step away from the ball than you normally are when a big man has the ball at the elbow. It just reshapes the floor a tiny bit, and the Nuggets are going to capitalize on that like they always do.
So are you a big fan of the kind of letting Jokic have the floor, basically kind of playing
five? Yes, I am.
Okay. Yes, I am. I don't know. I mean, I've seen it both ways, right? One, you give him the ability to see the floor really well, which, you know, he can make those tight passes, but again, also you can maybe create some more turnovers, so I don't know.
He shoots well enough that he could kill me, but you never know.
He's not a great three-point shooter. That's the only thing. He's just
yeah.
If he can get back to his 40% from three, I mean, he would be
one of the best players in the league.
Yeah, I mean, he still is. He's probably an 8 to 10 range.
He is.
He'd be, like, probably top five. He might be. But, you know, he is only 25 years old, so it certainly could come.
Right.
So, win or loss? I think probably the first. For me, it's a loss.
Loss, for yeah. On the road in Denver is a loss. They're good, and they have legitimate, like, their home court advantage. It's a legitimate advantage. So yes, I'm thinking.
Yeah, what are they this year at home? They're 15-5, so not, like, incredible, but still really good.
Right.
The only reason I say that because like the Heat are 17-1. That's like incredible. Philly's 18-2 at home, for example. That's incredible.
Right.
A lot of teams winning at home this year. Really odd. Like a lot of lopsided home records for teams.
Yeah, big gap between the top and the bottom of the league. Yes. So Adam, 3 or 2 wins this week?
I'm gonna go 3. I think if they lose one to Minnesota, they'll actually pull up the Denver win. But I don't think they'll. Nice.
Okay.
I think they'll win the first 3 of the week.
Yeah, man. I think I'm gonna pick 3-2, but it doesn't feel right looking at the schedule top to bottom. But I think they can win 3 this week.
So one more question: what seed do you think they are by the time we're talking next Sunday? What seed are the Pacers in the East?
If they win all 4, will they catch the Raptors? Like
probably, right?
They're the Raptors back. Play this week.
You're really stretching my neck.
Oh, what a hard question. Who would have seen
got it? You got to give me a second. You got to stand. All right.
So the Raptors, that is my answer is if the Raptors play a hard – oh, they do not play a hard schedule.
No, but they play a back-to-back on Friday, Saturday. It's
one. Yeah. No, they will still be the 5 seed. If they go – if they win 3 or 4, they are the 5 seed.
Well, so if they win all 4, they'll be half a game back of Toronto because Toronto only plays 3 times this week.
Yeah. We'll see.
So, yeah, I guess we will see. All right. As always, you can follow the Locked On Pacers podcast at Locked On Pacers on Twitter. Follow Tony at Teased NBA. Me at Freeman and 5. We will have post-game shows after, the Philly game and the first Minnesota game. And we'll have previews for the Friday Minnesota game and the whole weekend games and obviously other games of the week. You can follow Tony at Teased NBA, me at Freeman and 5. That's all for Locked On Pacers podcast. We will see you guys again. Tomorrow.